Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Lawless Prairie by Charles G. West, narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Bradley Smith, Michael John Casey, Thomas Keegan, Alyssa Wilman, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Yasmin Toisan, Richard Rowan, Nanette Sabard, Christopher Graybill, Nick DePinto, Johann Detweiler, Gregory Gordon, Danny Gavigan, Joel Santner, Patrick Bussick, James Lewis, and Nathaniel Perry.
Ballinger, Washburn, Connor, Stable.
Clint Connor looked up in surprise when he heard his name called. This was the second time this week he'd been assigned to the horse barn to clean out the stalls. It wasn't a bad job. It was better than working in the broom factory behind the prison. He tossed the last slug of coffee down his throat and put his cup and tray on the table beside the door, then walked over to the opposite wall to join the two prisoners already standing there. Ballinger and Washburn, he thought to himself as he waited for the guard to secure the short chain between his ankles. Of all the inmates in the 40-cell prison, he couldn't think of any two he'd less like to work with. Clint Connor reminded himself that the only way he could prevent his mind from rebelling against imprisonment was to cling to the belief that his mind and spirit were someplace outside these stone walls. With those two as partners, he'd probably do most of the work in the stables, but he didn't care. Working made the day move faster. The more he thought about it, however, the more curious he became. How the hell did a convicted killer like Clell Ballinger manage to get himself assigned to stable detail? Ballinger was already sentenced, and a hanging date had been set for a week from yesterday. A prisoner sentenced to hang was not usually sent to work in the horse barn. That job was typically given to men with lighter sentences because of a temptation to attempt escape. The prisoners mucking out the stalls were accompanied by only one guard, so the job was routinely assigned to short-timers and trustees. As a rule, men sentenced to be hanged were confined to their cells until execution day. Clint had to assume there had been a payoff to somebody. And he would bet that Nathaniel Boswell, the warden, knew nothing about the arrangement. Boswell was a hard-nosed former U.S. Marshal with a reputation as a stalwart enforcer of the law. He'd hardly approve of assigning a dangerous man like Ballinger to the stables. Clint Connor knew the notorious outlaw by reputation only. There'd been a great deal of talk about the man, supposedly responsible for the murders of 12 people during a spree of bank robberies over the last 2 years. Ballinger's repute made him somewhat of a celebrity in the recently opened Wyoming Territorial Prison, and he was the cause of much talk and speculation among the prison population. A big man, though not unusually tall, Clell Ballinger possessed an aura that tended to cow other men. With black hair, long and heavy, resting on the back of his collar like a bushy broom, a flat nose, dark eyes set deep under heavy eyebrows, and an almost constant scowl on his lips, The notorious outlaw was thought by some to be Lucifer himself. Ballinger had never sought to discourage that speculation. His hands were unusually large, with fingers thick and powerful. It was rumored that he had once strangled two men at the same time, although those present on that occasion would tell you that it was actually just a Kiowa woman and her infant son. There were some, like Clint Connor, who had little use for him, or the man standing beside him for that matter. Bob Washburn was a brainless dolt, doing time for the assault and rape of a 13-year-old girl. He had eagerly assumed the role of Ballinger's personal servant. Clint had made it a point to avoid the two of them up to this time. He had no fear of either man or the combination of the two. He just didn't like their kind in general. The day the guards brought Ballinger into the cell block, they seemed to purposely walk him by every cell in the prison to exhibit the notorious killer to all the inmates before locking him in next to Bob Washburn. It was a regular damn circus parade with four guards escorting the smirking outlaw. Well, for the most part, instead of demonstrating the punishment coming to those who broke the law, the parade only served to inform everyone that the new prison was now graced by the presence of a famous person. For many of the prisoners, Ballinger became someone to be looked up to for being feared by honest folk throughout Wyoming and Kansas. But as far as Clint Connor was concerned, men like Clell Ballinger were little more than scum on the slime of humanity. Now, some might be inclined to infer that the kettle was calling the pot black. Clint didn't give a damn what others might think. He knew the man who dwelt inside his young, muscular body, and he was at peace with him. He had made a mistake as a brash 18-year-old, and now, 3 years later, he was still paying for it. Although confinement threatened to bring him down at times, he was determined to fight against the longing to escape to the prairies and rugged mountains he loved. But halfway through his sentence, it was getting harder and harder to persevere. Thoughts of escape seemed to visit his mind more frequently with each new sunrise. Once they reached the barn, the guard nodded toward the tools propped in a corner of the tack room.
Connor, fetch them pitchforks and a broom.
Clint did as he was told.
Now, give one of them pitchforks to Washburn and you take the other one. Give Mr. Ballinger there that broom. I expect you'd rather have one of them pitchforks in your hand, wouldn't you, Ballinger?
I'm mad at that.
What are you doing on this detail anyway? You ain't supposed to be on any work details at all this close to getting your neck stretched.
Oh, I ain't one to lay around doing nothing when I could be helping you boys out.
Ballinger glanced over at Washburn and winked, causing the simple man to break out in a foolish grin.
You must have paid somebody off to get sent to the stables today. Nobody should have sent you to work here where there ain't nothing between you and the open prairie but this here shotgun. Let me tell you, this here shotgun's enough.
Oh, come on, Williams. What's wrong with a man getting a little bit of fresh air and sunshine before they hang him? You wouldn't fault a man for wanting one last day outside before they put him in the ground, would you?
That's Mr. Williams to you, Ballinger. Besides, ain't up to me. I didn't set the policy. I just know there's gonna be hell to pay for somebody when the warden finds out.
He motioned to all three of them to follow him into the barn.
Now you get to work with that broom and just keep in mind that this here shotgun has got a hair trigger. And I wouldn't mind saving the hangman a little trouble if you took a notion to run.
Why, Mr. Williams, I wouldn't have no idea cheating the territory out of hanging me. Hell, I'm looking forward to it. See what kind of saloons they got in hell.
I'm sure there's a place down there for murdering skunks like you. Now get in there and clean out that stall.
Williams waited to see that Ballinger did as instructed before turning his attention toward the other two prisoners. He gave Clint only a brief glance upon seeing that the young man was already at work. Washburn, however, had to be told to put his pitchfork to work. The morning progressed without cause for concern, while Williams made sure he remained alert to any funny business. He was sure, however, that it was risky letting a desperate outlaw like Clell Ballinger work this close to the open wide prairie behind the barn. He planned to return the notorious killer to his cell when he marched the three-man detail back for the noon meal. He glanced at his pocket watch.
11:15.
When he looked back up, he saw Ballinger leaning on his broom handle and staring at him as if amused about something.
Ballinger, wipe that smirk off your...
Hearing a pistol's hammer cocking, Williams abruptly turned to meet the muzzle of a Colt 45 only inches from his face.
Morning, Yancey.
Clell.
Yancey's dark eyes focused intently upon the guard's frozen stare as he slowly reached for Williams' shotgun. With no choice but to yield or die, Williams made no move to resist, releasing the weapon. Stunned by the suddenness with which the sinister outlaw had appeared, the guard could hardly believe their brazenness in carrying out this confrontation in broad daylight, no more than 50 yards from the main prison.
You must be crazy.
Washburn grabbed the guard's keys to unlock the shackles.
There could be guards coming in here any minute.
It'd be a sorry day for them if they did.
Another man walked into the barn.
Howdy, Skinner.
What about them?
The new face nodded at Clint and Washburn.
This here's Bob Washburn. He's in on it. Bob, throw a saddle on one of them horses in the corral. Clint, I don't know about him. He just happened to catch stable duty today. I reckon it's just your tough luck, young fella. Unless you're wanting to join up with us. I ain't planning on leaving no witnesses.
Wait a damn minute. He ain't in on this deal. I'm the one that stuck my neck out for you. That son of a bitch ain't never given either one of us a time of day.
Ballinger looked Clint directly in the eye.
Bob's right. You never did have much use for me or him. What do you say about that?
It was a lot to think about in a few seconds' time as Clint looked from one gun to the other, both pointing at him now. Ballinger's statement promised a death sentence for the guard, Williams, and for him as well if he didn't throw in with the escape.
Well?
Yancey turned to face Clint.
We ain't got all day.
I still ain't got a hell of a lot of use for either one of you, but you're holding all the cards and I want out of this place too. Also, we ain't but about 50 yards from the main building. If you go shooting off those pistols, you'll have half a dozen guards up here in no time.
He's right. Better use a knife.
Yeah, best done with a knife.
Clint turned to Yancey then.
Give me your knife. I'll take care of the guard and the rest of you can get a head start. Leave me a horse and I'll catch up.
Ballinger didn't respond at once. He just stood there staring at Clint, trying to determine whether he was attempting to fool him.
Give him your knife.
He turned back to Clint.
Now you can cut the bastard's throat, but we ain't going nowhere till we see the job's done.
Clint took the long skinning knife from Yancey and looked at the quivering guard. William, seeing no hope for his safety, took that moment to bolt for the barn door.
I got him!
Clint caught him before he could reach the door and tackled him to the ground. Yes, he started to go after the two, but Ballinger, still finding the situation amusing, caught his arm.
Let's see if he can do it.
Wrestling with the desperate man, Clint, with desperation of his own, managed to pin the guard to the ground. He put his lips close to the guard's ear.
If you want to live, you better damn sure play dead. I'm going to have to hurt you.
Sitting on the guard's back, he suddenly jerked William's head up. He made what he hoped was a convincing show of pulling the knife across the victim's throat. The slash, though not deep, was sufficient to immediately bring blood. William ceased to struggle and lay still. Clint wiped the knife blade across the guard's shirt and got to his feet.
He's dead. Let's get the hell out of here while we've got the chance.
Ballinger hesitated for just a moment, giving the guard's body a long look.
All right, let's get going. You'll be needing a horse, and you best be quick about it.
5 minutes later, the five fugitives were mounted up and left the prison in a fast lope. They rode on a line that kept the barn between them and the main prison until crossing a low hogback that offered concealment. Veering south then, Yancey led them toward Colorado. The daring daylight escape, a success. Clint rode last in the single file of riders, his knees bent like a jockey's in the short stirrups, and a hailstorm of conflicting thoughts swirling in his head. He'd never considered himself an outlaw, but he was damn sure one now. He could turn around and hightail it back. Ballinger might shoot at him, but probably wouldn't chase after him. And maybe he could square things with the warden, explaining the situation as it had occurred, leaving him no choice. Guard Williams would surely vouch for him. The problem was running free again across an open prairie. He did not want to return to the stone walls and his tiny cell for another 3 years. The three he had already served were killing his soul day by relentless day, until he had come to the point where he feared he might one day explode. He'd given them enough of his life, he decided. 3 years was enough for the crime that he had committed. As the riders slowed their horses in order to file down through a rocky draw, Clint glanced over at Washburn to catch the brooding simpleton glaring back at him. He wondered what in the hell he had done to make an enemy out of him. He was liable to have trouble with that one before this was over. Pete Yancey stood for a moment, thoughtfully watching the last-minute addition to their small party, as Clint sat off from the rest at the edge of the creek.
Ballinger, I don't know about that one. Maybe we shouldn't have brought him along. I got a funny feeling about him.
Hell, I expect he's in the same boat as the rest of us.
What do you know about him anyway? What was he in for?
Horse thief is what I heard. Don't know much more. I didn't have that much to do with him. Like Bob said, he didn't have much to do with anybody. Just kept to himself, mostly.
Yeah, I reckon we'll find out when we get to Fort Collins. Might be better if we run him off before somebody spots him in that getup, though.
Yeah, might at that.
There had been no plan to bring along two extra men on his escape from prison. He had gotten word to Yancey that there would only be one other, Washburn. Consequently, Yancey brought weapons and clothes for Ballinger and Washburn only. Now, he was looking at Clint in his prison stripes. There was no damn sense in advertising the fact that they were escaped convicts.
Hell, we can't ride into town with him in that damn jail suit. Somebody's likely to shoot on sight.
The plan, known only to Ballinger, Yancey, and Skinner to this point, was to hit the bank at Fort Collins. Yancey figured that Washburn would be included since he had supplied part of the bribe that got him and Ballinger on stable detail. He was wondering now what use the extra man might be, especially since he didn't even have a gun. The more he thought about it, the more he was certain he was not going to agree to a five-way split on the bank job.
I expect you're right. We got one too many. And we'd best get rid of him.
Why don't I take care of Mr. Smartass Connor for you? We don't want him around messing up our plans.
Why don't you do that, Bob?
Ballinger glanced over at Yancey and winked. Seated at the edge of the creek where they had made camp, Clint looked up to notice that three sets of eyes were focusing on him. He glanced over his shoulder at Skinner, who was evidently taking the opportunity to get a little shut-eye. Looking back again at the other three, he sensed that something was about to happen, something that involved him, and he did not like the feeling. Being the odd man, he had already given thought to the possibility that he might be eliminated. He was anxious to take his leave of the four, but not this way. Washburn took a couple of steps in his direction. There was a smug expression on the simpleton's fleshy face, and he walked with an exaggerated swagger. Never taking his eye off the three outlaws, Clint casually reached behind him, feeling around until his hand rested on a sizable rock. Then, after another fleeting glance to make sure Skinner was oblivious of it all, he waited, watching Washburn carefully. Whatever the play, it appeared that it was to be Washburn's alone, for Ballinger and Yancey seemed content to hang back and watch the show. The only weapon Clint had was the rock his hand rested upon. Not much to rely on when facing the six-gun riding on Washburn's hip. He was thinking that it could amount to a swift execution if Washburn had brains enough to simply pull the pistol and shoot him. He was gambling upon the notion that the bumbling child molester would want to gloat over his position of dominance to satisfy his jealous ego. And Clint was accurate in his judgment of the man. Washburn swaggered up to stand a couple of yards from him, his feet spread wide, his hand resting on the handle of his holstered pistol. A mocking smile quirked slowly across his broad face.
This here's the end of the line, Mr. Smartass. It's time for you to cash in your chips.
Washburn took his time pulling the revolver to give Clint plenty of time to think about it. Unable to understand why there was no desperate look of fear showing in Clint's face, he thought he had to explain what he was about to do.
You dumb son of a bitch, I'm fixing to shoot you.
Yeah, I figured.
Another quick glance confirmed that Ballinger and Yancey were spectators only. His fingers tightened around the rock. Disappointed to the point of dismay that his victim showed no signs of fear or panic, Washburn took another step closer and pointed the pistol at his head.
Damn you! I'm gonna put a hole in your head! How do you want it? Sitting there or standing up?
Well, if you're giving me a choice, I think I'll take it standing up.
Washburn took a step back again to give himself room, still baffled by the victim's calm acceptance of his execution. Clint's moves were slow and deliberate until he rose to one knee. From there, however, he sprang up in a fraction of a second, hurling a heavy rock into Washburn's face. The stone smashed his nose. Suddenly, Skinner woke up and reached for his weapon.
Let him be, Skinner!
Before Washburn could clear his head, Clint swung the stone at his temple. Washburn dropped to the ground like a sack of potatoes and lay still, his eyes glazed. Clint grabbed the pistol and backed away, far enough to gain a field of fire that could include the two men on his left and Skinner on his right. Aiming the pistol toward Ballinger and Yancey, he waited for him to make a move. Grinning, Ballinger held up his hand, and he walked toward Clint.
Take it easy there, son. Ain't nobody gonna shoot you.
He stopped beside Washburn, lying on the ground.
I like the way you handle yourself, young fella.
His head clearing somewhat, Washburn struggled up to his hands and knees.
Oh, damn, Clell! I don't think I can stand right now.
Well, that don't matter none.
But why?
Like I said, we got one too many.
Ballinger lifted his revolver. He put a bullet in Bob's head.
Looks like you got yourself an outfit. You can shuck them clothes off of him. I shot him in the head so as not to put a hole in his shirt.
That was damn thoughtful of you.
You're a cool son of a bitch.
Although maintaining a calm exterior, Clint could feel the cold pocket of sweat that had appeared under his arms, left by the tense moments of uncertainty when he was waiting to see whether he was about to meet his maker. Yancey and Ballinger walked up.
I'm cutting you in for a full share of the job Yancey's lined up in Fort Collins. We're planning on hitting the bank there day after tomorrow. That all right with you boys?
I reckon it don't make no difference to me. We'd already planned on a four-way split.
What do you say to that, Clint?
Sounds all right to me.
This was not the time to tell him that he wanted no part in anything the three had planned. Admittedly, he was a fugitive and on the run, but he had no intention of going the way of many an ex-convict. He was not a bank robber or murderer, and he was determined not to become one, no matter how desperate the situation. He had no choice but to seem to play along with him for the moment, however.
Good. We'll strike Fort Collins by tomorrow afternoon and look the job over. Yancey says they ain't got much of a share, but don't matter much. Four of us can handle anything they got.
Clint nodded and returned the smile Ballinger aimed his way. At least his main problem had been solved. He immediately busied himself with the removal of Washburn's clothes. The clothes were not a good fit, but they would do. His luck was better when it came to the boots. They were a size larger than Washburn had needed, but they were just right for Clint. He strapped the gun belt on and walked to Washburn's horse. He pulled the Winchester from the saddle sling, checked the action, and made sure the magazine was loaded. He felt a great deal more comfortable now.
Now that you got him skinned, drag him on out of here. He ain't smelled too good before he was dead.
Yancey was looking at the corpse lying there with nothing but his underwear remaining. He watched as Clint grabbed the body by the ankles and pulled it away.
You can pay me for them guns and clothes out of your share of the bank money.
Yeah, I reckon.
Clint looked the ferret-faced outlaw squarely in the eye. He backed toward a shallow gully, dragging the dead man over the rough ground. Bob Washburn's sightless eyes staring wide up at the sky, his head bumping drunkenly along the rocky stream bank.
I never did care much for that boot-licking turd.
It was early afternoon when they rode into the town of Fort Collins, close by the Cache La Poudre River. Judging by the look of it, Clint surmised that Fort Collins was a thriving place to live, with a church and a school, several stores and saloons, and a bank. On the way in, they had passed a few farms as well. The town seemed to indicate a welcome atmosphere. Clint could not help feeling remorse, knowing what lay ahead for the citizens with the money in the bank. It was a helpless feeling as well, for he struggled with the question of whether or not he should try to warn the sheriff or the manager of the bank so that they might ready themselves for Ballinger's visit. It was a dilemma he would wrestle with for the balance of that day, for there were several sides of the problem to consider. He truly desired to prevent the holdup of the town's bank, but he planned to be long gone from Fort Collins before tomorrow dawned. Also to be considered was how the sheriff would react if he warned him of the planned robbery. Since he was an escaped convict, the sheriff might deem it his responsibility to hold him, and Clint had no intention of returning to prison now that he was out. His only desire was to leave and possibly head north to live free in the mountains and prairies of Montana Territory, lose himself somewhere. How was it his responsibility to warn the town anyway? It would be in his best interest to simply slip out of town that night, let the sheriff and the bank take care of their problem themselves, the same as if he hadn't been with Ballinger at all. As they rode through the town, Skinner saw that they were passing a saloon.
Goddamn! That's what I'm looking for. I swear my throat's as dry as a corn cob.
We'll take care of business first. I need to take a look at that bank, then we need to get some supplies. I want to be ready to ride when that bank opens in the morning. After we get everything else ready, then we'll have us a drink.
Deputy U.S. Marshal Zach Clayton walked along the west bank of the tiny stream, studying the tracks that led away from the ashes of a campfire. The trail he had followed to this point had generally led south toward Colorado. It was an easy enough trail to follow, 5 horses and riders. They'd made good time, but evidently felt no pressure to ride through the night. Standing near a clump of willows where the tracks left the water, he paused and gazed out toward the open prairie. The hoof prints led to the west, but he was confident they would turn south soon enough again.
Fort Collins, most likely.
Clayton had spent enough years tracking fugitives from the law to know how to anticipate their actions. He'd gained enough experience over the years to know the typical thinking of an outlaw on the run, and of this one in particular. Clell Ballinger was probably the meanest, most cold-blooded killer he had ever hunted, but Ballinger was also possessed of a fun-loving nature. He loved his whiskey, and he loved his women, and he had a passion for gambling as well. For that reason, Clayton felt certain that Fort Collins would likely be Ballinger's first destination instead of heading for the wild country in hopes of disappearing altogether. A patient man, Zach Clayton was in a position to know Ballinger better than most. He was the marshal who dogged Ballinger's trail until he ran him down near Scott's Bluff in Nebraska and brought him into trial. Clayton had a personal interest in Ballinger's recapture, and he had been vocally critical of the inmate's ridiculously easy escape from prison. Crossing the stream again, he returned to the campsite, where his horse, a broad-chested sorrel with three white stockings, stood patiently waiting with reins on the ground. Before mounting, Clayton walked over to the gully once more to reassure himself that the underwear-clad corpse was the inmate named Bob Washburn. Based on the description given him by the warden, he was pretty sure of the identification. He knew it wasn't Connor, for Connor was a much younger man, and he certainly knew what Clell Ballinger looked like. So he figured he could mark Washburn off his list. The poor bastard had evidently exhausted his usefulness. So now, he was trailing four men, two of whom he couldn't identify. But if he had to guess, it wasn't a stretch of the imagination to assume that they were two of Ballinger's old gang. Pete Yancey came to mind. He had ridden with Ballinger from the beginning, and he was damn lucky to have escaped when Clayton had surprised Ballinger in a whorehouse. Of curious interest was the young horse thief, Clint Connor. According to the prison guard, Williams, Connor had saved his life by pretending to cut his throat. That just proved the man was not a murderer, but he was still a horse thief and an escaped prisoner. Clayton's job was to bring him in along with Ballinger, and if he was lucky, the other two who arranged the escape. Anxious to close the distance between himself and the fugitives, he struck out across the stream at a lope. He was still betting on Fort Collins as the first place the four would light. If he wasted no more time, he should reach the town sometime after dark.
Go get us another bottle, Clint.
I don't have any money.
Give Mr. Connor some money, Yancey. I need another drink. I need something else, too.
Ballinger winked and nodded toward a well-endowed woman talking to the bartender. Perceiving Ballinger's obvious interest, the buxom lady sent a smile in his direction. The smile more closely resembled a sneer, but it contained the proper message, and Clell motioned for her to join him.
It's a good thing we're making a withdrawal tomorrow, because we're spending it like it weren't nothing tonight.
That's right, partner.
Ballinger's eyes never left the woman approaching the table.
I got a lot of catching up to do.
He reached over and dragged the chair from the table next to theirs.
Sit yourself down, darling. Have a drink with us.
While she settled her generous backside in the chair, Ballinger poured her a drink and slid it over to her.
What's your name, darling?
Violet.
Oh, that's a lovely name.
Upon closer inspection, the woman exhibited the obvious signs of hard winters and rough riding. But through the magical powers of alcohol, she was transformed into an innocent dove in Ballinger's drunken eyes. Sufficiently under rye whiskey's spell, Yancey found himself likewise affected, and he asked if she knew of another virgin like herself. Clint slowly nursed a drink while watching the negotiations between the worn-looking lady of the evening and his two partners. Although Skinner seemed to show no interest in joining the party that was being planned for the hotel, he was obviously no less inebriated. Skinner, Clint surmised, was a dedicated drunk, interested only in drinking himself into a stupor and sleeping it off. He hoped he was right about Skinner, because right here, Clint started to think he had found an opportunity to escape. Finally, at around 8 o'clock, the drinking party came to a close. Skinner was already nodding drunkenly in his chair, and Ballinger and Yancey had settled their price. Ballinger got to his feet and pushed back his chair.
Come on, Rose.
It's Violet.
Whatever. It's time for Betty Bye.
Ballinger grinned foolishly at the puffy-eyed woman. Then he turned to Clint.
Well, you don't look as drunk as I feel. Good thing, I reckon, because I ain't sure Skinner even find a stable on his own.
I'll take care of him.
All right. Well, let's go then.
For a moment, his smile faded.
Keep an eye on them supplies and go easy on that bottle. Tomorrow's a working day.
When they finally left the saloon, Clint was happy to see that Skinner was to be no problem as far as his escape was concerned. It was all he could do to keep him on his feet long enough to reach the stable. As soon as they got there, Skinner curled up in a pile of hay in the corner of a stall, hugging a half-empty bottle of whiskey to him like a child hugs a teddy bear. Clint spread his saddle blanket over him and could see that Skinner was out for the night. In no hurry now, Clint saddled the horse Washburn had ridden and then helped himself to extra ammunition and supplies. After taking another look at Skinner, he led the horse out of the stable and climbed in the saddle. He rode out into an empty street, the town having gone to bed except for the hangers-on at the saloons up at the far end. Walking the horse slowly, he went past the sheriff's office and decided that he should leave a warning after all. Looking the building over carefully, he was satisfied that the sheriff and his deputies were home in bed, so he pulled up in front of the office. Taking out a piece of paper and a pencil he had taken from a hotel they had visited earlier, he wrote a simple note.
The bank is fixing to get robbed this morning.
Thinking that was warning enough, he walked up to the sheriff's office door and slid his note under the door. Satisfied that he had done his part for the people of Fort Collins, he climbed back in the saddle, and under a full moon, he slow walked his horse back toward the road he and the three outlaws had taken into town. With no particular destination in mind, he started back toward Wyoming, undecided about stopping on his way north to visit his father. It might be a risky thing to do. His father's little ranch might be the first place the law would look for him. He decided to think on it while he rode north. This would most likely be the last chance he could have to see his father again, because he planned never to return to his home once he reached Montana. Zach Clayton caught himself nodding off in the saddle as his horse plodded slowly along the road leading to Fort Collins. He tried to shake the sleep from his head, and he stood up in the stirrups to stretch his legs. He and the sorrel were both tired of traveling, and they looked forward to something to eat and a bed. With the light of a full moon, he could almost read the time by his pocket watch, but not quite. One thing he knew for sure, however, it was getting on toward bedtime. He wondered whether it was too late to drop in on his friend Jim Popwell. Jim was the sheriff in Fort Collins, and he had worked with Zach before on a few searches. Zach knew he'd be welcome to stay with him overnight, so he decided he'd ride straight through town to Jim's place on the river. He reached in his saddlebag and pulled out a piece of beef jerky to quell the demands of his empty stomach. A mile later, he saw the faint lights of Fort Collins. Maybe it was later than he thought, for the town showed few signs of life on the north end. One lone rider was the only person he saw traveling to meet him on the dark road.
Probably ran out of drinking money and headed home. Evening.
Evening.
Neither man bothered to look back as the distance between them increased to the point where they faded into the moonlit evening. Zach stood at the front door of the simple frame house.
Who is it?
I'm bringing the word of God to save all the hard sinners. Somebody in town gave me your name.
You what? Who the hell sent you out here?
Popwell opened the door and thrust a lantern up before him to reveal the grinning face of the deputy marshal. His deep frown turned instantly to a wide grin.
Zach Clayton! Oh, what in the hell? Come on in, man!
He threw the door open wide.
You are a sight for sore eyes, and the last son of a bitch to save anybody's soul.
Clayton grabbed his friend's hand and pumped it enthusiastically while slapping him on the shoulder.
Good to see you, Jim. Glad to see you're still standing up. I thought somebody might have shot you by now.
Oh, hell, man. Fort Collins is a peaceful town. We ain't got no trouble here. Hey, what are you doing down here, anyhow? Chasing somebody? You're riding mighty late at night.
Yeah, I'm on somebody's trail. And it looked like they were headed your way, but I ain't sure.
He hung his saddlebag over a chair back.
I thought I'd drop in on you for tonight, if it's all right.
He paused to look around the tiny room.
You ain't took up with a woman since I last saw you, have you?
Oh, hell no. I ain't found one that'd stay for more than a night and had to be paid for that.
He pulled the chair back from the table.
Set yourself down, Zach. I'll put on the coffee. You hungry?
Well, I could eat if you got something handy.
Soon, while Clayton ate some venison Popwell had butchered that afternoon, he filled them in on the reason he was in town.
Have you seen anyone resembling the four men I'm after?
Oh, well, no, can't really say. Well, like I told you, I took the last 2 days off to go hunting, since everything's been so quiet. We can take a look around in the morning.
Well, these are some bad fellas. Clell Ballinger and a couple of his boys.
Ballinger? I thought they hung him.
They were going to in about a week, but the son of a bitch broke out with two other prisoners. I found one of them dead yesterday, and the rest of them headed this way. They might not have wanted to be seen in town, but I couldn't find any sign that they left the road into Fort Collins. Can't say for sure they didn't go around, because the last several miles before I got here, I was riding in the dark.
Now, if there'd been any trouble, my deputy would have most likely rode out here to tell me. He lives in a little room back at the Palace Saloon, so he pretty much keeps an eye on things in town. We can check with him in the morning.
The two old friends sat around the kitchen table reminiscing, a little longer than Clayton would have preferred since he was already sleepy and tired when he arrived. But it had been a while since he had seen Jim Popwell, and the quantity of strong coffee that was consumed served to keep his eyelids up. Way past time when they normally would have dropped. As a consequence, they did not get the early start they had planned, and it was 8:30 when they left Jim's place and headed to town. Jim only gave his office a glance to confirm that his deputy wasn't there as they rode past.
Well, we'll ride on down to the palace and route Grady out. Of course, he could be eating some breakfast here at the hotel, though. No, we better look there first. I don't think you know Grady. Grady Jacobs? I believe I hired him since I saw you last. Young feller. His daddy's the Baptist preacher.
Just as Jim had suspected, they found Grady Jacobs hovering over a plate of potatoes and eggs and a generous slab of bacon in the hotel kitchen.
Well, morning, Sheriff. Did you have a good hunt?
Fair. I passed up a shot at a 12-point buck and took one of his ladies instead. I was looking for meat, and a nice doe is a little more tender than an old buck.
He glanced at Clayton and smiled.
Me and Zach ate a good portion of it last night.
After introducing the deputy marshal to Grady, he filled him in on Clayton's reason for being in town.
I'm looking for four men.
Clayton produced a sketch from a prison photograph of Clell Ballinger.
This is one of them, and he's with three other fellers.
No, I seen him. No, they was here. There was four strangers sitting at a table in the saloon last night. I asked Ernie if he knew him, and he said he'd never seen him before.
He took another look at the picture on the wanted poster.
And that feller... he was one of them, all right.
Clayton took over. Checking with the dining room staff, he learned that a man resembling the sketch and another man had come down earlier for breakfast, but there were only the two. A few minutes later, the three lawmen talked to the desk clerk and were told that the two gentlemen had already checked out of their room.
I best run by the office and get a couple of rifles just in case.
I need to find out which way they headed. You and Grady meet me back here. I'm going down to the stable. They must have had their horses there. Maybe I can find out where they went.
Yeah, there was four fellas here. They got their horses early this morning.
At least three of them did. One of them snuck out of here last night without paying for board or grain. I got my money out of the other three, but they wouldn't stand good for the other feller. Said they didn't even know him. Lying bastards. I should have known they was outlaws.
Which way did they go when they left here?
Yeah, I don't know. They just rode off toward town.
Much obliged.
Riding back toward the hotel, he saw Jim and his deputy riding hard to meet him.
Take a look at this!
The sheriff and Grady rode up beside Clayton.
It was under my office door.
Clayton grabbed the piece of paper Popwell held out to him and quickly read the brief warning.
The bank is fixing to get robbed this morning.
All three turned at once to look in the direction of the bank at the corner of the street. It seemed peaceful enough. But there were three horses at the rail out front. He didn't wait to talk about it. Turning the sorrel's head in that direction, he gave it a sharp kick.
Hyah!
There wasn't time to puzzle over who might have left the note under the door. It could be a ruse, somebody's idea of having fun with the young deputy while the sheriff was off hunting. Whatever, it deserved immediate attention. The three galloped up to the bank. Grady, anxious to make his reputation as a lawman, came out of the saddle before his horse was fully stopped. Before Clayton could caution him, he charged through the door. He was met by a .44 slug that caught him in the shoulder, spinning him around to drop on the step beside the door. Clayton and Popwell dived for cover. The sheriff at the corner of the building and Clayton on the walk beside a front window.
The next one in that door gets the same thing.
Where in the hell did they come from?
Yancey turned to confront the bank manager, who was lying face down on the floor beside his two employees.
You got some kind of signal?
He pressed the barrel of his pistol hard against the banker's skull.
How did they know what was going on in here?
I swear, there's no signal. I don't know how they knew.
It don't matter a hell of a lot how they found out. The fact is, they're here.
Ballinger looked over his shoulder to Skinner, who was busy stuffing money into their saddlebags.
Hurry up!
Then he turned to Yancey, who was covering the hostages.
Keep your eye on them.
Moving up to the front wall, he eased up close to the door and opened it slightly.
Hey! Out there, you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Well, then you better listen real good. I got three of your fine citizens laying on the floor in here, and unless you want a bullet in the head of each one of them, you better clear out of there. Leave the horses right where they are and start walking. I mean right now. Clear that damn street or I'm gonna shoot the first one.
All right, we're going. Ain't no need for anybody else to get hurt.
Ballinger watched as the sheriff and Clayton helped the wounded deputy walk. As they backed up the street, Clell got a better look at their faces.
It's that son of a bitch. I know that bastard. That's that damn Marshal Clayton. I owe him.
He stuck his pistol out the door.
Damn, they're too far away.
Yancey looked back to the room where Skinner was working.
You about done?
I'm done.
Skinner had two stuffed saddlebags, one on each shoulder.
We gotta get the hell out of here. Clell, the street clear?
I'd like to stick around here till we shoot that bastard.
God damn it, Clell, to hell with that marshal. I want to live to spend this money. Is the street clear? Can you still see him?
Nah, they're gone. I don't see nobody on the street now.
All right, let's move. They won't be gone long.
Yancey reached down and grabbed the back of the bank manager's collar.
Come on. We're going for a little walk.
He pulled the quivering man to his feet, while Ballinger stepped cautiously outside the door. Satisfied that there was no one close enough to take a shot at him, Ballinger waved his partners on.
Bring old Mr. Moneybags out here in front of us.
He waited until Yancey shoved the frightened bank manager toward him.
Now we'll see how much your fellow citizens think of you.
Yancey held the banker in front of him.
Skinner, throw them bags on the horses and untie them other horses.
Can you take care of them?
Clayton nodded and slipped into the alley. Running as fast as he could, he sprinted behind the stores and saloons. Wishing he had his rifle instead of a pistol, he cut back up the side of the bank just in time to hear several gunshots as Skinner scattered the horses. Just as he rounded the front corner of the building, he saw three horses galloping away. There was time for one shot. Skinner, trailing behind the other two, was the only reasonable target. Clayton stopped running. His heart was pounding so hard from his sprint that he had to strain to hold his arm still while he aimed the pistol. The shock slammed into Skinner's back and he keeled over sideways and slid from the saddle. Clayton cocked his pistol again, but he knew it was useless to fire. He could only watch as the two outlaws disappeared between the buildings. Clayton turned one way and then the other, trying to spot his horse, but the sorrel was nowhere to be seen. The street suddenly filled with people coming from the stores and shops now that the shooting seemed to have stopped. He spotted Popwell and Grady at the other end of the street.
Taking Grady to the doctor!
Clayton acknowledged that. Then, with pistol still in hand, he walked up to the body lying in the dusty street. He reached down and rolled the corpse over on its back. The face was unfamiliar. One of Ballinger's gang, he supposed.
That leaves three.
He stood up again and stared in the direction Ballinger had fled, fighting off a feeling of frustration over the opportunity he had missed. If he had known beforehand of the planned bank holdup, they could have set a trap to capture the three of them. They might have had time to prepare a surprise party for Ballinger if they had gone to the sheriff's office as soon as they rode into town. That thought led him to speculate on the origin of the warning note. It was natural to assume that Clint Connor was most likely the author of the note, especially when he considered the fact that one of the four he'd chased had cut out the night before. It had to be Connor. He had saved the prison guard's life. There was no doubt about that. Clayton was beginning to realize that Clint had no choice in the matter of joining the escape. The thought of it bothered Zach Clayton's regimented mind. He preferred things to be cut and dried, black or white, criminal or law-abiding, and Connor's behavior just muddied up the situation. But in the end, he knew he had to do his job, and that was to catch criminals. Connor might have done the best he could to help the side of the law, but he was still an escaped horse thief.
And he sure as hell didn't turn himself in again.
Zach looked to his left and saw that a boy had inched up to look at the dead man.
Running fits the Undertaker.
The boy nodded and ran off.
I'm wasting time.
The next order of business was to find his horse. In the 15 minutes that it took him to find his horse, he also found the sheriff's and Grady's. With that done, he decided to walk all of them over to the doctor's office. As he got closer, the sheriff stepped out the front door and walked up to meet him.
How's the boy?
He's gonna be all right. Caught one in the shoulder. Doc says he'll be fine.
He nodded toward the extra horse Zach was leading.
Looks like you got one of them. I better round up a posse to go after the other two.
I'd rather you didn't, Jim. I don't have the time to wait on it, and I think I've got a better chance of slipping up on him without the bother of a posse.
Suit yourself. But I'm willing to give you all the help I can. After all, I am the sheriff here, and they sure as hell pulled a hold up in my town.
I appreciate it, Jim. I know I can count on you if I need to. There's a saddlebag full of the bank's money on that feller's horse. At least they got part of it back.
The sheriff nodded, then broke out into a grin.
You didn't draw a little expense money out of that saddlebag.
I thought about it, but it's all there. I reckon I ain't smart enough to be crooked.
Clayton stopped at the spot where Ballinger and Yancey had entered the river, evidently heading south. The thought of the lone traveler he had met on the road north of Fort Collins sprang to his mind then. If that man was who he now suspected it was, it meant that of the three he was bound to bring in, two were heading south while the other was heading north. It was something to think about, but it did not make his decision difficult.
I want Ballinger.
Upon reaching the other side, he stopped to search for tracks. His were the only ones to be found. Not really surprised, he walked the sorrel west along the bank for about a quarter of a mile without success. Turning around, he retraced his steps, noting that the sorrel's tracks were easily evident. A little farther than a quarter mile past the point where he had left the river, he found two sets of tracks. From that point, leaving the rocky riverbank, he saw that there was some effort taken to avoid leaving a trail. But to a skilled tracker like Clayton, there was little challenge. Generally, they had followed the river east instead of heading straight south toward Denver. After a couple of miles where the river snaked its way through a thick forest of pine, the tracks led back into the water.
This is where they were hoping to lose me.
He guessed right, for he spent the better part of the afternoon before discovering a faint hoof print left on a grassy bank some 3/4 of a mile upstream. Scouting in the general direction indicated, he finally found another print that verified the trail pointed north.
Cheyenne.
He led his horse into the dense forest of pine, surprised that they had changed direction. It was almost impossible to follow a trail in the thick bed of pine needles that covered the floor of the forest, so he was forced to go primarily on instinct, with an occasional bent branch or rubbed bark to reassure his guess. By the time he left the pines and struck their trail leading up into the hills, it was growing too dark to continue.